chapter 5, verses 31 and 32. Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 and 32. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife must give her a written notice of divorce. But I say to you, any man who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. I'm reading through that. I think I must have copied that from some translation other than the New King James. I've got 6 or 7 translations on my computer. And I think I actually accidentally copied that from something other than the New King James. That doesn't look right to me. Is that the English Standard Version, Lynn? All right, I copied it from the English Standard Version. But at any rate, it's a good standard translation of the Scriptures. But I knew that didn't look the way that I thought I'd memorized that. But that's Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 and 32, from the English Standard Version of the Scripture, which is a good essential literal translation of the Scriptures. I was visiting with a preacher friend of mine not too long ago, and he was talking about a book that he'd read, written by a preacher, and he said he covers 8 different theories that brethren have concerning divorce and concerning remarriage. And I just sort of smiled because I've got notes on all of those myself that I've compiled through the years. That's an advantage of being an old preacher. I was familiar with all of those theories that brethren have. But the problem is, since that book was written and since I compiled those notes, I know of at least 2 more theories. So that makes 10 that I know of. Now, that doesn't mean that I know all the theories that brethren have come up with concerning marriage, divorce, and remarriage. But I know of 10 at least theories that brethren have to try to get around what the passages say. And this has caused a lot of problems among brethren. Of course, you know, and we've talked about in the lessons here, how common divorce and divorce and remarriage is in the world today. And the church too often reflects the world. And so as the result, those things are a problem among brethren. And all I want to do, and we began this last Sunday, and we may not end it this Sunday, all I want to do is to go through the Bible passages that teach concerning marriage, divorce, and remarriage, and simply see what they say. I'll make some comments, but they're not going to be extensive comments, because I do believe that these passages are understandable. And I believe that a common person with a common education can read these passages and understand what they say. And in fact, it's kind of like what I say about Acts chapter 2, verse 38. You have to have the help of a denominational preacher to misunderstand Acts 2, verse 38. You have to have the help of a denominational preacher to misunderstand Mark 16, verse 16. They're just too clear. They say what they say, they mean what they mean. And I believe the same thing is true concerning these passages, and primarily it's the words of Jesus while he was on this earth, that teach concerning marriage, divorce, and remarriage. They say what they say. They mean what they mean. Don't let somebody explain them away. All right. So with that having been said, what Christ did in Matthew chapter 5 and in the remainder of his teaching that's recorded while on this earth, we've gone over now what the Old Testament taught last week concerning marriage, divorce, remarriage. And we saw that Moses allowed divorce for any uncleanness, and that's kind of a generic, it's a vague word. It can mean a lot of things, and that led to lots of debates among the Jews as to what was the basis for divorce. But all that time, God still hated divorce, as Malachi said in Malachi 2, verses 13 through 16. But now when the Lord comes to the earth and begins his public ministry, what he did was restore marriage to God's original plan. And so God's original intention today is the way it is. And we're going to see that particularly when we get to Matthew 19. But we're going to take the passages in order of their occurrence in the New Testament. The first is Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 and 32. And I do believe I've got this from the New King James. Matthew chapter 5. Verses 31 and 32. I would set the context just real briefly. This is a part of the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7 are the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, taught the principles of righteousness of the kingdom of heaven. In Matthew 5:20, he said, "Unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will not inherit the kingdom of heaven." So he's teaching us the nature of the righteousness of the kingdom of heaven. And he contrasted that righteousness of the kingdom of heaven with the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. The people thought that the scribes and the Pharisees were the ultimate standards of righteousness. But Jesus taught, unless your righteousness exceeds theirs, you will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 21, going down to the end of the chapter, Jesus gives six contrasts between the teaching of the scribes and the Pharisees and what he teaches, which is the principles of the righteousness of the kingdom of heaven. So he's contrasting what the scribes and the Pharisees taught. And remember in Matthew chapter 23, Jesus said, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they teach, you observe and do, but do not do according to what they do, for they say and do not." They were hypocrites. But primarily, there are exceptions, but primarily, they did teach what Moses taught. And so it's not that Jesus is saying that the scribes and the Pharisees were wrong about Moses. He just replacing what they taught and what Moses taught with what he teaches, which is the groundwork for the New Testament. Brother Foy Wallace Jr. used to call this Pentecost pointers. That's what he called the principles in the Sermon on the Mount. Because Jesus is announcing ahead of time the principles of the kingdom of heaven, which began on the day of Pentecost. All right, now that's the background. In Matthew 5, verse 31, he tells them what the scribes and the Pharisees taught. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife must give her a written notice of divorce. Well, that is what Moses said in Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through 4. But what the scribes and the Pharisees were emphasizing is the legal procedure you go through for a divorce. They weren't talking about whether or not you should divorce. They just talking about if you're going to get a divorce, then you go through the proper legal procedure. You dot every I and you cross every T. You do it the way the law says. That's all they were concerned with, the legality of what was being done. Jesus goes a whale of a lot deeper than that. He goes back to, should you get a divorce or not? We'll talk more about that when we get into Matthew 19. But now Jesus, in contrast, the scribes, the Pharisees, if you do it, then you do it the right way. You follow the proper legal procedure. Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4. In contrast with that, Jesus says, but I say to you, any man who divorces his wife, now I'm going to leave out the exception for just a moment. Now there's an exception there, and I'm not going to leave it out, don't worry, but just for a moment. Any man who divorces his wife causes her to commit adultery. All right, so if you just divorce your wife for any reason, you're causing her to commit adultery. Now, does that mean that a divorced woman is an adulteress just because she was divorced? I do not believe that's what the Lord is saying. Here's the reason I believe that. In 1 John, now this is not in your notes. And by the way, for those who are confused with your notes, begin with Roman numeral 3, please. Because the first two are what I taught last week. Here's something for you to add. 1 John chapter 3, verse 4. Whoever commits sin commits lawlessness, for sin is lawlessness. So here's the point I want to make from that. Sin is what you yourself do. If I sin, I did something. Nobody, listen carefully, nobody can make me sin. Nobody can make you sin. Sin is something you do of your own volition. Sin is something I do of my own volition. Yes, we all sin, but nobody can make you sin. Nobody can make me sin. Sin is what we do because we decided to do it. Okay? Sin is the transgression of the law. If you violate God's law, you've sinned. Well, if somebody does something to you over which you have no control, does that make you a sinner? Of course not. That makes the person who did that bad thing a sinner. It doesn't make you a sinner because somebody did something bad to you. Now, couple with that, Matthew 18, verses 6 and 7. Matthew chapter 18, verses 6 and 7. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it were better for him that a millstone were hanging around his neck and it were cast into the depths of the sea. That's Matthew 18, 6 and 7. And a millstone hanged around his neck and it were cast into the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses. The word offense means a cause of stumbling. Something which causes somebody to sin. Woe to the world because of offenses. For there must be offenses, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. If I am the occasion of somebody sinning, it would be better for me for somebody to take a big, you know what a millstone is, a great big old rock that's round and in where they used to grind grain into flour. And that thing might weigh a ton. How would you like to have one of those things hanging around your neck and then you're just thrown off in the middle of Bull Shoals Lake? What would be your chances of survival? Well, somewhere between zero and zilch. I mean, you're not going to make it, are you? You're going to be dead. You're going to drown. And the point is, you'd be better to be killed than to be the cause of somebody stumbling into sin. Now, listen carefully. It doesn't mean you can force anybody to sin. But it does mean you can put a stumbling block before people that they stumble over and causes them to sin. Now go back to what Jesus said in Matthew 5, verse 32. Now even today, if somebody divorces their mate, what's that mate going to do? Almost assuredly, that mate's going to remarry. Almost assuredly. Now you go back to the first century when a Jewish woman had no way to make a living. She couldn't get a job somewhere. They didn't have factories that employed women. They didn't have factories, period, did they? What would a woman do for a living if she were divorced? She'd have to either go back to her father's household, and she might not be welcome back in her father's household, or she'd have to find another man to marry her. And so she doesn't have the right to do that, and so Jesus says you cause her to divorce. What is assuming is that the woman remarries. And of course, that's almost always the case, even today. Now, there is an exception there, except for sexual immorality. I like the old King James. I say it a lot of times, don't I? I like the old King James better here. It says, except for fornication. That is the word. It's the word porneia, which does mean, but sometimes when people think of fornication, they think it's only between a man and a woman. Fornication, porneia, is all unlawful sexual intercourse of any kind. It can be a man with a man. It can be homosexuality. But that's still porneia. It's still fornication. It's still sexual immorality. That's the word. And so the point is, if your marriage partner, now I'm going to limit myself to what Jesus is saying. He's talking about a man. Remember, the Jews, the wife couldn't divorce the husband. Only the husband could divorce the wife. So he's talking to Jews in Jewish terminology. Now, we're going to show later on that Jesus later made it clear that this is a two-way street, that the women have the same obligations, the same rights as the man as far as that marriage tie. But that's later on in Mark chapter 10. But if a man divorces his wife for any cause other than sexual immorality, he's placing a stumbling block before her to cause her to stumble into sin. And you would be better off to have a millstone tied around your neck and thrown into the sea than to cause somebody to be a stumbling block to cause somebody to sin. And whoever marries that divorced woman is also committing adultery. And of course, I might also add to this, it takes two to tango, it takes two to commit adultery. And so obviously that means both the man and the woman are committing adultery. Now, Jesus there does give, now listen carefully to this, please. And now you can look at the passage yourself and see whether I'm telling the truth or not. Jesus does give one reason for divorce, except for sexual immorality. He gives no reason for remarriage in that passage. That passage doesn't give anybody permission to remarry. Now, do you see any permission to remarry in that passage? It's not there, is it? But it gives, so Jesus gives one reason for divorce. Sexual immorality, porneia, fornication. That's the only reason Jesus gives. You divorce your mate for any reason other than that, you're placing a stumbling block before that mate to cause that mate to commit adultery. Now, I believe that is clearly what Jesus is teaching in Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 and 32. Now, let's go to Matthew chapter 19. We're just taking the passages in the order that they occur. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" They were trying to get Jesus involved in their own debate, so maybe they could have something to use against him. There was one school of the Jewish scribes that took the loose view that uncleanness was such a general term that it could include anything that the husband didn't like about his wife. It would include if she said, now this is actually what they said, if she says something bad about his parents, then that's cause for divorce. Now that was the loose school, and that was the school of Hillel. And there was another strict school, the school of Shammai, that said, oh no, that is adultery. That's the only thing that they, that's the only reason. Now they were both wrong, by the way, but that doesn't matter because it doesn't apply to us today. One was too loose, one was too strict. They were both wrong as far as what the law of Moses said. But regardless, it doesn't matter because that's not our law today. But that's what they're trying to do, get Jesus involved in an explanation of Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4. So they want to know, can I divorce my wife for just any reason? I want to add something here. I had a email exchange with a brother that's been a friend of mine for over a half century, last year or maybe year before last, don't remember. And I have considered him a very fine preacher through the years, and so help me. He and other brethren like him that I've had a great deal of confidence in the past have just shattered that confidence. I believe believe a man can or a woman can get a divorce for burning the toast or anything. They're worse than that loose school of the Jews. Any reason under the sun, but they just can't remarry. You remember when we're starting this, the question the Jews asked, now Jesus threw in some free teaching, no extra charge. But the question the Jews ask is about divorce. They didn't ask anything about remarriage. They asked about divorce. Can a man divorce his wife for just any reason? Now, I've got a lot of brothers that say, well, yeah, pretty much any reason. Well, I don't believe that. And here's why I don't believe it. Right here in Matthew 19. And he answered and said to them, have you not read that he that made them at the beginning made them male and female? Where's Jesus going to? He's beginning where I began last week. He's beginning in Genesis chapter 2, verses 18 through 24. You want to know about the marriage relationship? You go back to the foundation of it. The foundation of it is what the Lord said in Genesis 2, 18 through 24. Have you not read that he that made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh? Here's a question, and Jesus answers it. Who made them one flesh? Who joined them together? Well, Jesus tells you, so then, they're no longer two but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate or divorce. Now then, God did the joining together. It is the height of arrogance. It is the height of rebellion to loose what God joined, to break apart what God put together. If you have a scriptural marriage relationship, God joined one man, one woman together as one flesh. God put them together. Man does not have the right to break apart what God put together. Now, if the passage ends there, it doesn't. But if the passage ended there, here's what Jesus has taught. There's no reason to divorce. Rather than for just any reason, God joins you together. Don't divorce. And that is the point that Jesus is making. God joins you together. Don't divorce. You don't have the right to break up what God put together. Well, the Pharisees didn't like that. beginning now in verse 7. They said to him, why then did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce and to put her away? They overstated their case, by the way. Moses didn't command it. Moses allowed it. And Jesus points that out. So now Jesus is going to tell them. He's not going to explain to them Deuteronomy 24. He's not interested in that, and I'm not either. What he does is show why God allowed them to do that. He said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, allowed you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, all the way from creation, the sixth day of the creation, from the beginning, it was not so. God never intended for divorce. That was never part of his plan. He always intended one man, one woman, one flesh for life until death do you part. That was always God's plan for the marriage relationship. But because they'd gotten so far away from God's plan, he could not bring them back under the law of Moses. He just brought them part way back and prepared them for the coming of Christ. And Christ brings us all the way back to God's original plan for the marriage relationship. And so he points out to them why God allowed that under the law of Moses. But now he expands upon this. And he said, verse 9, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality, same word, porneia, fornication, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. Now, here he throws in the marriage another. They didn't ask about that, but he threw that in free of charge. So, if you divorce and remarry for any reason except sexual immorality, porneia, fornication, then you're committing adultery. Now, the New King James, the Old King James, add in verse 9, whoever marries her is divorced commits adultery. That's not in the English Standard Version, the New American Standard Version, the second half of that clause. Doesn't make a hill of beans a difference because it's in Matthew 5:32 in all the translations, so it's still there. But nonetheless, there's one reason that Jesus gives for divorce, sexual immorality. There's one reason that Jesus gives for divorce and remarriage, sexual immorality. That's the only reason the Lord gives for either divorce or for divorce and remarriage. Fornication, sexual immorality. The innocent party has the right to put away the guilty party and remarry. Anybody else, divorced and remarried, is committing adultery. That's not what Keith said about it. That's what Jesus said about it. Now, immediately, I'm going to have to finish because we're out of time. Immediately, somebody said, Keith, that's too hard. I've had brethren that I have great confidence. That's just too hard, Keith. Don't talk to me about that. Talk to Jesus about that. That's exactly the way Jesus' own disciples reacted to that teaching. Look at verses 10 through 12, and with this we'll bring the lesson to a close. His disciples said to him, if such is the case of the man with his wife, it is better not to marry. Lord, that's too hard. Why, if that's the way it is, it's better just not to get married. That's what his own disciples said to him about that. Yes, from the very first time that was taught, the reaction even by the disciples was, that's just too hard. We can't do that. Did Jesus back off? Look at verses 11 and 12. But he said to them, all cannot accept this saying, but only to those to whom it has been given. Some people don't have the ability to follow what Jesus said here. So they're all right. Is that what he said? No, read on. For there are eunuchs. Now, you know, a eunuch is an emasculated man, literally. I believe he's using a figure speech here about someone who is abstains from sexual relations. Okay? There are eunuchs who were born thus from their mother's womb. There are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men. And there were eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. That is, for the kingdom of heaven's sake, they did without sexual relationships. He who is able to accept it, let him accept it. Now, here's what I believe Jesus is saying. If you disagree, you let me know. We'll talk about it. Well, you may not be able to maintain the marriage relationship as God intended it, so don't get married. If you can't do it the way God said do it, just don't get married. There's nothing sinful about living the single life. There's nothing wrong about living. There's nothing second-class citizen in the kingdom of heaven about living the single life rather than being married. And if you can't observe what God said concerning divorce, then don't get married. Now, that's what Jesus is saying about it. Now, if you disagree, you let me know. Well, that got us through Matthew 19, verse 12. We're making some progress. And I appreciate you coming and listening to these things. And seriously, if you